Hello, everybody. Welcome to Unified Purpose. This is a podcast where we share inspiring tales of compassion, resilience, and community spirit. And you guys know me, the host, Daniela, and I'm Penji's partnership coordinator. And we have a very special guest today, Holly Beach. Hi, Holly. How are you doing?
Hey, Daniela. Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast. Holly is from the Idaho Office for Refugees. And we're going to talk about a really interesting topic. But to kind of get the ball rolling, break the ice a little bit, Holly, can you tell us a little bit about what you guys do, what the mission is about, anything that we got to know?
Yeah, thanks so much for this opportunity to share. So as the Idaho Office for Refugees, we are the resettlement program for our state. So most states have a refugee resettlement office. And here in Idaho, we are the ones that oversee the refugee resettlement program. Idaho's had a refugee resettlement program since 1975, so we just celebrated 50 years, and the Idaho Office for Refugees has been coordinating that work since the late 90s. Our goal is really to make sure that Idaho has a good structure, good partnerships, a welcoming place where refugees can come and find opportunity, find the resources that will help them to thrive, and really be connected with the rest of the state. You know, helping other Idahoans know that we have resettlement here. Here's what it means. Here's how you can meet some of your new neighbors, that kind of thing.
That's so interesting, which actually leads me to the first question that I had, because I think the process of becoming a refugee and then kind of like once you get to the place where you're going to is very complicated and very like grueling, I think, for people. And I think we don't necessarily sometimes think about that, right? You kind of just see the refugee as like once they're already settled, the success. And I think it's really interesting that you guys kind of focus on that. So I wanted to hear a little bit about what that process of resettlement actually looks like from start to finish, not just like when they're, you know, doing great.
Yeah, exactly. So refugee resettlement has, you know, it's a worldwide endeavor and partnership. So there's other countries besides the US too that have resettlement programs that will welcome people. Refugees have had to flee their home country because of persecution or war. And so sometimes people face situations where, you know, the tides turn in their country and all of a sudden, if you have this last name or if you're this religion or you look like this or you believe this, then you're no longer welcome in your own home country. So they've had to leave for their own safety. Definitely was not a choice or something that people expected or wanted. But they do flee, they get out of their country. A lot of times they'll end up in a refugee camp in a neighboring country. And sometimes people live there for years, sometimes raising their children there in the camp. A lot of the folks I've been able to get to know here in Idaho, you know, they spent the first 15, 17 years of their lives living in a refugee camp in a country neighboring their country of origin. So once they're able to apply for resettlement and make it through the approval to be welcomed by a third country, that's when they get the tickets booked. And sometimes they're coming to a place that they have no concept of what it's going to be like. It's funny to hear people who fly into Boise and their only picture of America was like New York or LA. Yeah. Boise is definitely not that. And so just kind of getting used to what the community will actually look like that they're in, getting that initial everything in place. So housing, getting kids in school, getting your medical appointments taken care of, getting all the paperwork filled out. So just kind of the initial, all the things you have to do, and then going from there and just really starting a new life.
What's really interesting to me is that in Idaho specifically, you guys have like a very high rate of refugees, right? Like you had a history of, you know, having very large resettlement for refugees. And I imagine having so many people come in also kind of influences the culture of Idaho. I like, you know, like the refugee idea, I would imagine it sort of creates more of like a melting pot type of situation.
It's been cool to see. I live in Boise, and that's one of our cities that has resettlement. And another one's called Twin Falls, which is a smaller, more agricultural based town. So those are the two places in Idaho that have resettlement agencies welcoming folks. And just growing up in Idaho, I've always been really interested in other cultures and other languages. And being involved with the resettlement program and all the people that have been able to come through that, it really does give you that taste of the world right from your own city, which is beautiful. It's just the different people, perspectives, the business ideas that they bring and the friendships and just like the sense of hospitality that I've noticed in a lot of the refugee communities here, that sense of also slowing down and connecting. I think in American culture, and me myself can forget to slow down, stop looking at my phone. I've gotten to know different people that their cultural mindset is different. And so it's really helped strengthen my own view of the world.
Yeah, I always feel like learning from different cultures really kind of puts things from your own into perspective.
Exactly.
But going back to kind of that resettlement process, I'm curious to know how you guys do with like specifically with the cultural aspect and language aspect, because I mean, you're probably having people who don't speak English, and this would be for, I would believe, any country, right? So like, let's say you're a refugee in Germany, but you don't speak German, or you're a refugee in the States, you don't speak English. Also, most refugees come from very difficult situations in their own countries, which means that they have limited access to a lot of times education, access to, I think, like basic needs. So how does that, you know, sort of like process look like for them to sort of get them acclimated to the climate of this new place that they're in, specifically, I guess, Idaho in your case?
Yeah. It's interesting because the people who do resettle, there's such a range of where they're from, what kind of access they had to education. A lot of people speak multiple languages. Sometimes English is one of them, sometimes it's not. So we have an English language center where people who resettle, they go to take English classes when they first get here. And it's kind of like a first community hub for them to get to meet other people, to have a scheduled class, get to know the culture better. We have presentations from like, we have a police department liaison who comes in and gives presentations, and then the Idaho Human Rights Commission, just so people can kind of get acclimated to what the culture is like here, what resources are available to me, get better acquainted with the language. And then for professionals that know English, it's interesting because when you know a language, but then maybe you go to work in a professional environment and there's terms, you know how we all have our office lingo that there's terms that just don't make sense. So we have another class that's specifically English for professionals, kind of that next level to help them feel more comfortable at work. So there's a whole range of people getting jobs. Sometimes it's just that initial, like, I need a job and I'll look for something maybe that fits my interests better later. But for now, I'm just going to take this first job that I can get. We see people that had, you know, really successful careers, degrees, expertise sometimes in their home country before they had to flee. So we created a program to help them get relicensed here so they can continue to use those skills in our community and benefit our community from that.
Didn't realize I was muted, but yeah, I mean, I think like that's huge in terms of like actually helping people become active members of society, which actually brings me to the other question that I had, which was related to more of like the psychological aspect of it. Obviously there's a lot of things like language barrier, cultural stuff, but it's also a lot of like emotional toll. It takes an emotional toll on people, and I'm curious, like, how do you actually help people get through it, especially I think those first few months when you move to a different place and you feel out of place. And I think it's slightly different in the situation of a refugee, because if you move abroad with like, I don't know, for like a job or for school or something, if you really don't like it, you can always just quit and go home.
Yeah.
If you are a refugee, you probably have to sort of figure out how to make that the best out of the situation that you're in, because you can't return to your home country. How do you guys actually provide help to these people who probably struggle to just adapt to the world that they're now in?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I want to give a huge shout out to the other resettlement agencies and nonprofits in our community, because we have a Neighbors United network. So it's a coalition of a lot of us focused on helping our community, and specifically, you know, what's it like to be a refugee here and how can we unite our efforts to make sure that the services are the strongest they can be. And so there are agencies that offer really culturally relevant ways of mental health, and because it can look different across cultures, and certain words can turn people away. So certain words like a mental illness, if you use that kind of language, it can really turn people off to wanting to engage because they don't want their community to look at them as if they're unwell. And so these agencies and organizations do a really good job. A lot of them hire on people who have gone through it themselves. So not only do they have that firsthand knowledge of what it's like, but they have the cultural and language skills to really meet people where they are. And so that might look in the form of a women's group where women can feel safe coming together, sharing. They do art together. Some of these really healing. And most of it is like just connecting and knowing you have a safe place to connect and belong. And so, but there are others who offer, you know, more traditional like counseling services that have that cultural awareness to really do it in a responsible way. I've noticed too, things like soccer. Soccer is huge. And I've heard from a lot of people that just say soccer was that first thing when they got here that really helped them feel at home and like a part of their, or for one woman, it was crocheting, you know, different forms of connecting. There's a really cool group here called Artisans for Hope. And they bring women and teach them like sewing skills, and then they can make things and sell them. And so that, and that's just a community group as well, provides that sense of belonging. So different things like that are in our community. So not only are they learning and making and sometimes even getting to like sell what they're making, it's also a chance to be connected.
It's funny that you mentioned soccer. So I'm from El Salvador, and like you would be surprised at how big soccer is in like a lot of parts of the world. Like I grew up and my family, like the men in my family specifically, they were super, like that was the sport of choice. It still is here, you know, like the boys in school, they were playing soccer during recess. They're still watching like soccer games, like the World Cup, whenever that happens is huge. I'm not, never been a sports girl, so I'm much more like, oh yeah, whatever. But the culture is super big. And I think it, I thought it was like strictly only Latin America and maybe like Spain and stuff. But then when I started traveling, I realized that it's like all over the world that people really love soccer. Yeah, it's super big. And I think because in the US, it's a little bit different, right? Because they have like, I think in the US, you have like basketball and American football and all of these other sports that also get a lot of attention, that people don't realize how big soccer is, but it's huge. It's like, so it's interesting to me that that would be one of the things that unite people, because that makes sense, like being from the same teams and like,
Well, a lot of these kids too talk about growing up in a refugee camp and making soccer balls out of anything they could find. For one kid, it was like a bunch of plastic bags that they put together really tightly, and he still had this ball, and he brought it to our refugee resettlement conference and spoke and showed this ball that was like the main source of joy for him and his friends when they were growing up. And I'm really excited because Boise is getting a pro soccer team. So I think it's like picking up in the US, and I'm really excited for that and how that will bring people together.
Yeah, for sure. It totally is. I think it's picking up in the US too. Like I was surprised because I genuinely thought it was just like a Latin America. I knew it was big in like the Latinos because I was one, but I didn't know that it was like a worldwide thing.
You should, we have an Afghan cultural center because one of our largest populations of people who resettled in recent years were from Afghanistan. And so we got a grant to open a center to really kind of give them a community gathering place, which has been really awesome. But the center, there's a soccer team, and the men have this little rivalry going on with Seattle. And so they went to Seattle, played, and then we hosted Seattle here. And it just was so cool. It brought everyone together. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's really sweet. I think it's always great, especially when you're talking about communities that are desperately needing that community spirit. It's going to help them a lot with that process. And I also wanted to ask you about something else that I think we kind of touched on it right now when we were talking about soccer, which is how do you actually resettle or integrate? How does that integration process look like for a child versus an adult? When you're looking at like a child refugee versus like a person who has you know, like maybe 30, 40 years old and is in very like different situations of life?
Yeah, that's a great question. I know every individual has their own story, but just based on the conversations that I have, some trends that have come out are, so I interview people on our podcast called Mosaics and try to help share the stories of Idahoans who have gone through resettlement. And so for some of them, they came as kids. And a lot of the commonalities that they share when they talk to me is, I feel like we had it a lot easier than my parents because they really shielded us from what was going on and tried to make sure that we could still have a childhood. And so I think, and then when they come here, they enroll in school. And so they're making friends, they're learning English a lot faster. And so I think, but I think for the child, something that hits them maybe later in life is this sense of not knowing, not being as connected to your roots as much and knowing like where you came from. And so I think the parents might still have that stronger connection to where they came from because they had more life there. And so for parents though, it's amazing to me what parents do and how much they give for their children. I met a guy who was a civil engineer in his home country, but didn't have like the credentials or the quite the level of English needed to practice civil engineering. And plus we use a different system, right? The metric system. So trying to switch all that, but he had to work. He had little kids, his wife, they are new here. And so he started like driving Uber. He got a janitorial job. And so you kind of see that parents just doing what has to be done to make sure that their kids can have a safe life. But the adults, I mean, that's a really important one too, to focus on. And there are definitely groups that meet to make sure that the adults too have that sense of community that might be built in for their kid at school, you know?
I think, so like my job moved my father to America when I was a child. So we lived in the States for like, maybe like a 3 or 4 year period. And then we moved back to El Salvador as soon as like that job was kind of finished. But I remember like my experience was very much kind of just like thinking everything is, obviously I wasn't a refugee, so it's not the same. But you said something that was really interesting, which is that like you as a child, for you, it's just fun and you're meeting people and you're making friends and, you know, like everything is different and new and it's easier for you to learn the language and to adopt. And years later, you know, like I grew up and I was talking to my mom about it and she was like, those were really hard years for me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, really? And she was like, yeah, because, you know, like I had to stay at home with you guys. I had to like sort of like navigate this new country whilst being a mom. You know, like she said that we actually didn't have like, I don't think we were like struggling, but we were definitely very tight on money.
Yeah.
And so like we didn't really have access to a lot of like things that could be considered fun. And I didn't know that because I was a child. So I just remember my parents taking me to like every park in the suburbs that I lived in. And I had no idea that that was like what was happening because my parents were shielding me very much from like situations that were there. She was like, no, they were really difficult years for like us as parents. And I was like, No idea. You know, like I remember my time there, like that period of my life is super fun. And so like, it just reminds me of what you were saying about refugees.
Yeah. And I definitely don't want to like undermine how hard it can be for kids too. You know, a lot of these kids have had to see things that no one should ever have to see. And so there's definitely still support needed to help process and work through what they've gone through. But I do think overall, I have seen a lot of that where parents are just sacrificing a lot to make sure that their kids are okay.
I think that's very commendable. I mean, it really shows you how much a parent will give for their kid, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and like, also I think with adults, you probably have to look more into, at least my experience is that as you get older, it's harder to make friends. I think when you're younger, it's easier. And then you put that into the context of a different country and people who come from different walks of life. I imagine that a lot of the adults struggle with specifically friendships. And if they're leaving their home country where they either have those friendships and family in that community, I imagine that you probably have to sort of figure out a way to make a new one in this new place that you're at, right?
Yeah, I remember one dad was telling me, so they lived in Afghanistan and they lived in the city, and he and his family and their kids were in one apartment unit. His mom was like down the hall, his sister was, on another floor, his brother lived nearby, and then like the corner of the apartment building was called, I think, a kindergarten, but basically it was just childcare, very affordable, very accessible, and the apartment rent wasn't that high of a percentage of his income. And then he came to Boise, which he said, I'm really thankful to be here because, I don't, they were literally being like targeted by the Taliban if they would have stayed there. So he wasn't complaining, but he was noting how different it was, how expensive childcare was, how much rent took of his income. And so those are big adjustments when you're used to a more communal place where everyone kind of helps pitch in watching out for your kids, or you're not just like go to work and then go home and everyone just goes into their individual houses like that. For a lot of the people I talked to who've resettled here, is just not how things up. It was much more communal. Like, everybody on your street. If someone on your street died, everyone's going to the funeral, right? If someone needed help, people are pitching in. And so those are some other lessons that I've really taken from that, of how much we need each other and how important community is.
Yeah, it's true. I feel like the community aspect is probably very different. I also wanted to ask you regard like specifically regarding I guess placing people into jobs. You mentioned earlier that you had someone who was a civil engineer, but like in their home country, and then they could not practice this when they were in the States. Are you able to like reintegrate everybody into jobs that like they could potentially, like be helpful to society with and have like, a decent income? Or do you feel like it's harder? With like I'm assuming it's hard depending on the case, but do you think it's harder because they're refugees, or is it easy to sort of find that an avenue for most people?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, what they want is just agency to make that choice and then the stepping stones to get there. And so my office, I kind of picture us as trying to be those stepping stones or that beacon, that direction, but it's really down to the agency of that person, what their dreams are, what their aspirations are. That might change when they come here. For one guy, he was a pilot in Afghanistan and decided coming here that he wanted to shift more into, he got an engineering degree. And so as long as people feel like they have the resources and the light posts along the way that they can reach what they want to do, that's our goal. Idaho has a shortage of healthcare professionals. And so we have our global talent program that helps professionals from New American backgrounds get back to their careers. There's a specific cohort within that that's just for doctors, because that's one of the hardest industries to get. You have to take all these exams. It's very expensive. They're very intensive. And so a retired medical professional, American guy, saw this happening and he leads this cohort. And it's really helped people get back into, clinics, hospitals, helping fill a shortage for Idaho while they get to do what they love to do as well.
Yeah. What are some of the partnerships or like work that you have been doing that with like local, I guess, schools, groups, businesses that have been especially effective with the support of refugee resettlement?
There's so many partnerships. Like, this is only possible. Like, the success of our program is only possible not because of us, but because of this network of really amazing people who a lot of us just are so proud to have resettlement in our state. And because we know people, we've made those relationships, we've seen the life-changing difference that it makes for people. And so there's a lot of support for it. One cool example I'll share is, I mentioned that we had some Afghan pilots resettle here in recent years, and one of them was just sharing at a Rotary Club and to like a small group. And one of the people in that group was himself a Marine veteran, a former aviator, and his heart went out to these pilots. And he helped us launch a program to help them get relicensed here, which was a huge endeavor. And he put so much of his own resources and time into it just from hearing someone speak at a Rotary Club. So you see those kind of connections that just get made with beautiful outcomes. We do work closely with the school districts. We have you know, every quarter, all the stakeholders come together. We talk about resettlement, what's going well, what do we need, what are the resources. So that's definitely one of the big partners. And then there's the resettlement agencies themselves, which a lot of people confuse us as the Idaho Office of Refugees. We're not the ones providing that airport pickup, that case management when someone gets here. That's the resettlement agencies, which we have three in Idaho. So we work very closely with them. And they do things like you're talking about, like that job readiness, that cultural orientation, plugging people in and helping people feel like they belong here. It's really our biggest goal is when you belong somewhere, it's different than welcome, I think, because welcome implies that there's a host and there's a guest. And
yeah,
you really want belonging where we're all in this together. And that's what we try to create.
Well, that's amazing. I think that's a great note to end the podcast on. Very hopeful. But before we close it off, I do want to give you the space to tell people where they can go in and find you if anything that we spoke about today resonated with them or they would like to work with you, partner, if they're from different states or interested in this. Floor is yours.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah, so you can find us at idahorefugees.org. And there's also a link to our podcast there if you'd like to hear more of these stories that I've been talking about. But if you live in another state and want to get involved, I would just look up your like refugee resettlement with your state and see where those areas are to plug in. I will say that community support has really been vital this year. The resettlement program nationwide was put on a suspension in January. So we are just doing what we can and really wanting to get back to our full work of welcoming folks and get back to this program being a success. So I hope that you do, if you're interested at all, even just like the encouragement, the outreach to your resettlement office would be huge right now.
Awesome. Yeah, I will be adding the links to your website on the description of this video so that people can easily access you guys. And thank you so much, Holly, for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Daniela. It was really great talking with you.
It was really great talking to you too. And I will see you guys on the next episode. Like, subscribe, the whole shebang. Thank you so much.